This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Friday, April 30th. I'm Matt Hoisch. In today's headlines, the long road of mine reclamation, Capital Conversation takes a deep dive into healthcare, a day in the life of a miner with Fintan Cole, and a mountain weather forecast. It's been about 30 years, but Cindy Medina still remembers when she learned about the Summitville mine contamination. A neighbor called her on the phone.
And she said, "Have you heard there's fish floating in the Alamosa River?" I said, "What?" And she said, "Yeah, that there's been a fish kill in the Alamosa River." I'm like, "Why?" And she said, "Well, Summitville went belly up and the river is totally contaminated. It's a dead river."
Over the years, operations at the gold and silver mine in southwest Colorado led to large-scale erosion, causing increased acidity and heavy metal contamination in the Alamosa River. Medina is a member of the Alamosa River Keepers, an organization devoted to water quality and quantity issues on the river. The group came out of the Summitville disaster.
My mother used to go fishing in the Alamosa River. We used to go tubing. The kids in town used to go tubing in the Alamosa River. And now it was just this orange slime that was coming down the river.
The contamination cost more than just natural beauty. The operator abandoned the site in 1992, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency took over. Decades later, the federal government has spent roughly $250 million cleaning up the mess. And that's just one mine.
Spread all across the West, we have a lot of abandoned mine sites, a lot of kind of acid-generating mine sites that are causing water quality issues.
Marcel Gastambide is the Animas River Keeper. According to a 2017 report, Colorado has roughly 23,000 abandoned mines across the state and about 1,800 miles of streams impacted from pollutants due to acid mine drainage. It's a big issue, but it's always been hard to get attention and funding to tackle it. That's according to Jennifer Thurston, executive director of the Information Network for Responsible Mining, which monitors hard rock mining in Colorado. There's so many mines across so much space, it's hard to know where to start.
Sorting the wheat from the chaff, what are the most significant sources of pollution and going after those first? And then kind of making a priority plan for how you're going to clean it up, well, it's pretty difficult if you don't even have an inventory that's complete or understand what is even out there. And, you know, so that's work that takes decades to make any progress on.
But mine reclamation efforts might get a boost in the coming months. Part of President Biden's proposed American Jobs Plan includes $16 billion to support jobs plugging oil and gas wells and restoring and reclaiming abandoned coal, hard rock, and uranium mines.
What are the sort of improvements you think this $16 billion could lead to in the coming years? I mean, do you think you could see a substantial impact from it? Or, again, is it just kind of a drop in a very, very large bucket?
Is it okay to say both?
Aaron Minces is senior policy counsel at Earthworks, a nonprofit that aims to protect communities and the environment from negative impacts of mineral and energy development. On the positive side, he points to jobs.
Especially in Montana, where they've had reports on this, they say for every $1 million spent on mine reclamation, 14 to 33 jobs created.
Thurston also points to jobs.
Known for many, many years that reclamation keeps miners employed after the mining stops. And, you know, that these are really good ways to create jobs in rural communities.
But Minces also wants to see deeper reform around mining regulation, including the creation of an abandoned mine land fund supported through money from the private sector to pay for reclamation.
Otherwise, we just have taxpayers paying for these liabilities.
A similar program already exists at the federal level for abandoned coal mine reclamation, but there isn't one for hard rock mines. And when it comes to major disasters, previous funding has dried up. Back in 1995, Congress didn't renew corporate taxes that supported the Superfund, which finances toxic waste cleanups. Remember the $250 million Summitville cleanup? Cindy Medina is worried a similar disaster today wouldn't have that sort of support.
Because if it had to happen, at least there was some money to help us through it. If it happened today, it would be very hard to find that kind of money.
But beyond funding the pollution cleanup, Medina says there have been other costs around Summitville. Local volunteers sacrificed years of their lives to help with the work. And the community, she says, continues to struggle with the stigma that the river is still dead, even though, she says, it isn't anymore. One program, Rediscovering the Alamosa River, uses fishing to help kids connect with the river.
And the fish have been tested through the health department, so it's just re-educating the public that the river is okay. But it was so, you know, there was so much media coverage of it at the time that it's going to be a very slow process to change the image.
Mining is long, hard work. So is cleaning up its aftermath. Across the country, healthcare remains a contentious topic of conversation. In Colorado, the state legislature is working on a bill to lower premiums, but it's hitting a few speed bumps. This week on Capital Conversation, KOTO's Julia Caulfield talks with State House reporter Scott Franz about what's going on.
Hey, Scott, thanks for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today.
Hey, my pleasure, Julia.
So today I did want to do a little bit of a deep dive on the healthcare bill that's moving through the state legislature right now. And it looks different than maybe sponsors originally were planning for. Can you give a brief overview of what this bill is as it stands now?
Right. So as it stands, the sponsors have dropped the part of the bill that would have created a nonprofit run by the state to offer this new health insurance plan on the individual market. That was kind of a piece of the bill that was creating the most tension with hospitals, with insurance companies, because they don't want to compete against a government entity that isn't, you know, concerned with profit margins or anything like that. So instead, the sponsors say they have secured this new agreement to have private insurance companies offer a standardized plan starting in 2023 that would have new regulations kind of overseen by the government. The state would not, you know, be involved in offering the plan other than to kind of tell insurance companies some of the parameters. And this is actually very similar to the proposal that got shelved last year because of the pandemic.
You know, if it's a health insurance option that's obviously, as you mentioned, being overseen to some extent by the state, but it's being offered by private insurance companies, how are lawmakers arguing that this is still a public option for folks?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And, you know, when we ask lawmakers that at the Capitol, their response so far is they feel their constituents don't really care about the specific method. They just want rate reduction, whether it's, you know, a government-sponsored plan, you know, that's offered by, you know, a new nonprofit board, or if the government takes an action that kind of triggers insurance companies to, you know, offer something new. They feel like each option is good, and I think they're less worried about, you know, whether it's called the public option or, you know, whether it takes this different form. Now, I will say Representative Dylan Roberts told me while they were still heavy in negotiations that he preferred the nonprofit option. He thinks that, you know, that was a more kind of surefire way of getting to the rate reduction, getting the government in control of its destiny of trying to lower healthcare costs. You know, with this, you know, still has more reliance on private insurance companies, which, you know, lawmakers have been expressing frustrations about rates for years. So, you know, it'll remain to be seen, you know, how this works. I will say, you know, for listeners on the West Slope, you know, that have been waiting for years, one change that, you know, rewrite of the bill did trigger is, you know, initially the goal was 20% premium reductions over 2 years. The new bill is 18% premium reductions over 3 years. So the timeline has been pushed out a little bit in terms of the goals, and we'll just have to wait because there's still a long road ahead with this bill. You know, I listened to the committee hearing, and, you know, there are even some Democrats who voted for it that are expressing concerns.
On that note, you know, you just mentioned that there are maybe some skeptical Democrats, maybe some Republican members of the state legislature who are not thrilled with this bill. What are you hearing from people who have concerns about what this bill looks like?
Yeah, so I think it's important to note that there is, you know, this struggle with the bill that, you know, on one hand, lawmakers want to lower health insurance costs. On the other, you know, to do that, some of these regulations we're talking about on a new plan would put limits on how much hospitals can be reimbursed for. And if you're a very lucrative hospital in the Front Range, you know, that may not be as big of a deal as if you are a very small hospital that doesn't have a big profit margin. And I think there's just a concern when I say Democratic lawmakers skeptical, you know, these are people who work in the healthcare industry themselves, doctors, people like Representative Mullica, who, you know, a nurse, and their concern comes from the impact to the healthcare industry, because opponents will say this cost has to be shifted somewhere, whether that's other people, you know, with insurance through their employers or, you know, hospitals. But on the other hand, supporters will say, you know, this isn't a mandate, that they are just offering a new option and more competition and trying to lower prices for everyone, because, you know, there are people out there who, you know, face that really awful decision of, do I pay for health insurance or do I risk getting an injury on the ski slopes or at work that would bankrupt me? And that's what they're trying to fix.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for taking a couple minutes to chat with me today.
Hey, my pleasure, Julia. Thank you.
That was KOTO's Scott Franz reporting from Denver.
You can't touch this.
Students in Telluride will officially be out of school for summer vacation in less than a month. The 2020-2021 school year has been one for the history books. And in this installment of A Day in the Life of a Miner, Telluride High School's Fenton Cole talks with one of the people keeping the school together this year. Have a listen.
This is Fenton Cole on your Day in the Life of a Miner update. Today, we're interviewing Sarah Kimball, the principal at Telluride High School. Ms. Kimball, when was your first day as a principal?
My first day, I've got to remember. So I've been doing this for 6 years. So it actually, you know what happened, Fenton, was the principal before me left before the school year was over. And so I kind of filled in at the end of the school year, and then I applied for the job, and I got the job. So I have to remember, I can't remember what year it was, 2014 was the end of the school year, and then officially started 2015 in August.
When you graduated from high school, where did you go to college?
I did my freshman year of college at American University, and then I transferred after my freshman year to Boston College in Massachusetts.
Now this may seem sad, but have you ever had to expel a student from school?
I'm not sure how to answer that, but I have had to do a lot of discipline issues. Some have gotten close to expulsion. But most people we've been able to work with.
Why did you think that a principal would be the best fit for you?
You know, when I was growing up, I never thought I'm going to grow up and be a principal. But when I worked in the school, so I worked in the school here as the counselor before, and I love working with kids, I thought leadership would be a good next place to go.
Finally, who's your favorite NFL team and why do you like them so much?
So my favorite team is the Denver Broncos. And I liked them before I lived in Colorado because my dad was from Denver. So we grew up as Bronco fans. And when the Broncos were in the Super Bowl, I grew up in New York, my dad painted the bathroom bright orange. And so we grew up Bronco fans.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with us, Ms. Kimball.
Thank you, Fenton. I really appreciate it.
This is Fenton Cole reporting live from Telluride High School, and we'll see you next week.
Tune in to Off the Record on Tuesday, May 4th to hear Fenton Cole on KOTO with A Day in the Life of a Miner live. There's no such thing as a free lunch, so the saying goes. But free yoga, that's a different story. Every Wednesday in May from 4 to 5 p.m., Tri-County Health Network staff member and Telluride Yoga Center instructor Julia Johnson will offer a free community yoga class at the Gondola Plaza on the Oak Park lawn. If weather is an issue, the class will take place at Telluride Yoga Center. No registration is necessary, and extra mats will be available on a first-come, first-served basis. At least 11 skiers and snowboarders died in crashes at Colorado ski areas this past season. That's according to reporting from the Colorado Sun, which surveyed 16 county coroners to collect the data. Ski areas, according to the Sun, are not required to share information about deaths that occur on ski runs. None of those ski area fatalities were in San Miguel County, which reported zero deaths. The reported deaths were in Boulder, Clear Creek, Eagle, Garfield, Pitkin, and Summit counties. Chris Linsmeyer, Public Affairs Director for Colorado Ski Country, told the Sun their member resorts have a 10-year average of about 0.9 deaths for every million skier visits, less than the National Ski Areas Association average of one death per million skier visits. Those who died this past season in the recorded incidents ranged in age from 15 to 69. The Lower Colorado River Basin is preparing for its first-ever water shortage declaration, likely coming later this year. From KUNC, Luke Runyon has more.
Demands for water continue to outstrip supplies in the rapidly warming Colorado River Basin, which means its largest reservoirs, Lakes Mead and Powell, will hit their lowest levels ever recorded later this year. A shortage declaration from the federal government will restrict certain users in Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico. Tom Bouchatsky directs the Arizona Department of Water Resources. He says the cutbacks are painful, but residents shouldn't panic.
You're not going to see a request for people in their homes to only shower twice a week. We're not in that situation. This is not a crisis at that level.
Farmers in Arizona will bear the brunt of the shortage. The watershed is currently experiencing its driest conditions in almost a decade. I'm Luke Runyon.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for mostly clear skies tonight with a low in the mid-30s. Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 70, and Saturday night partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 60 and a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. And Sunday night, mostly cloudy with a low around freezing and a 50% chance of rain and snow showers. This has been the news for Friday, April 30th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. And now, personal commentaries.
Acting on behalf of the Telluride Housing Authority, the San Miguel Regional Housing Authority is conducting a housing lottery for 285 Mahoney Drive, B6, a unit in the Longwell Complex. Longwell B6 is a two-bedroom, two-bath unit with amazing views of the valley floor. In addition, the unit comes with a garage, two designated parking spots, and energy-efficient features. The lottery is open to qualified households per the approved lottery application packet and the Telluride Affordable Housing Guidelines. Qualifications include minimum employment, earned income, and minimum residency requirements, as well as property ownership and net asset limitations. Households must maintain qualification continuously as long as the household owns, rents, or occupies the housing unit. Applications will go live on Monday, May 3rd on the San Miguel Regional Housing Authority's website at smrha.org. Applications may also be picked up from the SMRHA office outside Unit G17, Shandoka Apartments at 820 Black Bear Road. Applications will be accepted through May 26th at noon. Absolutely no late applications will be accepted. An open house to view the unit is scheduled for Thursday, May 6th from 5 to 6 p.m. SMRHA will hold additional open houses the week of May 10th. Please check the lottery calendar for these dates. For additional information, please contact SMRHA at 970-728-3034 or admin at smrha.org.
Hey, CODA listeners. We want to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Over the course of the month, Tri-County Health Network will be hosting a variety of exciting events to stop the stigma surrounding mental health and to encourage community members to seek out the resources they need to thrive in all capacities. Join us this upcoming Monday, May 3rd, from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. in front of A&B Bank and Telluride to kick the month off with information about our upcoming events, as well as other resources TCH Network has available to help you be your best self. On Mondays in May, Jenny Thomas will host a free community support group via Zoom. Join to create greater connection with community members facing similar challenges. Additionally, join Julia Johnson each Wednesday in May for free yoga in Oak Street Lawn by the Gondola in Telluride. No registration is necessary, and mats will be provided by the Telluride Yoga Center. To learn more about these events and to view our full event schedule, visit tchnetwork.org/events-and-classes or give us a call at 970-708-7096. Stay tuned throughout the month for more exciting events and opportunities.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you'd like to comment, please contact a staff person here at CODO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.